Welcome to the Independence by Design podcast, where we discuss what it means to be a business owner and ways to get unstuck from the day-to-day so we can design a business that gives us a life of independence. Cash flow poor and balance sheet rich. I think that's my favorite quote from this conversation with Eric Roman. And Eric is going to share his story about scaling up his dental practice and then having a valuation of $40 million, but being miserable in the business because he had personal stuff going on. He didn't have enough cash flow. And yet he had this big business and this big ego. And he was trying to figure out how to get unstuck, pulled the ripcord and sold, and realized that he was still sitting there in his own personal issues. And what he talks about is what he wished he would have done differently and how an ownership framework that helped him decide and make decisions between cash flow, equity growth, and what you want out of your time would have helped him make different decisions. I know you're going to absolutely love this conversation with Eric. If you want to know more about him, check out the show notes. Without further ado, here's Eric Roman. Eric, how are you, man?
Good, Ryan. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm excited for this conversation. We were introduced by our mutual friend, Casey Ta, and I think we just hit it off and we literally were like started on third base with the conversation. It was like, oh, we have eaten some of the same forms of glass. So why don't you just give us the listeners just a quick, or however you want to start, man. Like as far as like you have done quite a few things, you've got, you know, grown and exited a business and you're now on to creating a solution and a solving a problem that you had. And you and I both found different angles to this, you know, kind of similar parts or similar journeys.
So, you know, I started life as a dentist, which was my shortcut to owning a business and having a like protected income. But I barely practiced as a dentist. I became a multi-location CEO. I started adding dentists, adding locations, growing, all that sort of stuff. And went through a couple of cycles with that, with building, they called them dental groups, DSOs, dental service organizations, built through there. And man, like there's a lot of lessons in the journey, you know?
We're gonna unpack them.
Lessons like egos, hubris, all the stuff, things you think you know that you actually don't, places where you get lucky and you thought you were smart and you really weren't, and all that sort of stuff. But through all those ups and downs, I finally figured it out enough to at least substantially say I had a business that had some value. But one of the things that got me there was the concept of like business operating system, something that you and I, you know, shared an attraction to. I was a huge EOS fan. I felt like EOS saved my business when I was ready to pull the parachute. I was like ready to tap out. I was done. Can't take this crap anymore. I'm on a hamster wheel. Like fires everywhere. You put out one and three more pop up, you turn and like five more. So EOS gave me like clarity, like a plan, and it worked, a language, you know? And it was great for my teams. And it moved me from, nope, you're never going to make this, to successful, profitable exit. Now, the reason for my exit, we talked about this too in our conversation. The reason for my exit was that for all the success that was going on inside of my business. And like, everybody's got me speaking on stage, we're growing, we're adding locations, we're adding EBITDA, we're adding revenue. It looks great, but my life was crap. And so all the success that was happening here inside of the business wasn't translating to the place I actually had wanted. I never said I cared about how big the business was. I wanted a certain lifestyle, right? I wanted an experience with my family. I wanted connection. I ended up with five kids and they didn't know who I was. I wasn't spending any dedicated time with them. I was doing my best, but I wasn't getting anywhere there. And so, you know, that was the reason that, oh, like it hurts me just to like say it over again. I got out of the business, a business that I actually enjoyed and loved, because I thought that getting out of the business was the only way I was going to be able to save my family, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I did, and it turned out I was wrong, that getting out of the business didn't solve crap inside of my personal life, which that was like the punch in the gut. I spent 2 years doing a private equity exit, 2 years going through all the pain, all the stuff, ended up, you know, it was good, but it wasn't what it could have been. I took a haircut because I was just ready to get the heck out. And then all of a sudden it's all done. And turns out still don't have a relationship with my wife. Still don't have relationships with my kids. I'm still fat. I'm still mentally not in the space I want to be. And so I realized that what had been missing the whole time inside of my journey was that there were all these solutions for how to have a business. Nobody was giving me systematic step-by-step solutions for how to engage as a father, for how to have the health I want, all those things inside my personal life. I didn't have the operating system, my personal life, I'd had in my business. And, you know, and so we see so much alignment though, because you and I had similar experiences inside of our relationships with our investors and owners inside of our companies, right? And so, man, since then, like, I've done a lot of stuff, coaching companies, building tiny home communities, trying my hand at all sorts of other entrepreneurial endeavors. And at the end of the day, it all brings us back to like the macro picture of what are the most important things inside of our lives, right? And how do we get ourselves and other people there consistently, reproducibly, and you know what? Enjoy it, right, Ryan? Like, we just want to enjoy our lives. So
here we are. I love it, Eric. And we were talking about, like, I've been working on the ownership framework and you're working on, like, essentially the life framework. But I want to go back to, like, you know, you had mentioned there was a couple, when I had heard when we first chatted, there was a couple kind of forks in the road of, like, when you were, can't remember how big you were, but like when you implemented EOS and then you grew even further. But there was this point where, like, there was a ripcord that you wanted to pull. And I believe that a lot of times that people pull that ripcord, it's because they feel stuck and they don't know what, they want to get out of it, but there's not a clear path forward. But it was EOS, but then something wasn't solved. And then you ended up selling to private equity.
Yes.
What would you have done differently? Like, what would you have gone back? I want to preface it with that. Like, I don't like regrets. So I like this saying of, I wouldn't change a thing, but I'm happy I've changed. So that's kind of, but what would you have done?
My former self? I'm a coach, right? That's what I do. Like, what would I coach my former self on? Eric, here's something you may not see that's obvious as heck 2 years down the line, right? I feel that question. And the first thing that I would say is that, like, I didn't know that if Eric had told Eric, hey, Eric, you can solve all the problems you're having inside of your personal life without having to exit the business. And not only that, it's the easiest thing. That's the thing that I couldn't believe. Right? That it's actually easier to solve your crap right where you are, buddy, than it is to pull the parachute. We always think jumping out of the plane is easy. No, jumping out of the plane is scary as hell, and it's filled with a bunch of other risks and variables. The plane you've been flying in for years is a heck of a lot more predictable.
Why was it so hard?
Because you know what? I didn't know the answers. I didn't know where to find them. And I wasn't surrounded by anybody that was talking about it. Everybody in my network, all they wanted to talk about was EBITDA, profitability, and exit, right? That's the story. And who are those people? Well, they're people that are stuck in the crap just like you. And it's the transaction brokers that make money by you pulling the cord. And so, like, listen, you gotta be considerate. Like, who are the people you're listening to? I wasn't listening to anybody that was sitting there saying, Eric, I know what you're feeling and I know how you feel like your business hasn't given you what you wanted out of your life. Let me help you solve that a different way, brother. There's another option. And at least I could have been in choice then. I wasn't in choice, Ryan. Like, I was like, nope, I only have one binary. Way to get what I want.
Yeah, it's binary. Yep.
Yep.
What, because, you know, that's what I talk about, you know, my mantra is like, the more I understand the options, and we can't inundate ourselves with too many options, but the more choices, the more we have optionality, the more we have freedom. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but it's true, I think. And it provides me with less anxiety. Going back to, like, your feeling of being trapped or stuck, like, what were you trying to actually solve for? You said you've mentioned your personal life and your family. And, like, so, like, how, like, what felt wrong and misaligned?
Number one, my company was worth a lot of money. None of it was in my bank account. 100%.
Sorry, no,
do we want you to pause there?
Cash poor, bro.
Yep. And so here I am. I've got a company worth like 40 million bucks, right? And my wife is sitting there saying, I don't, like, can we even afford to, like, pay for a private school for our kids, right? Yeah. Like, what is that? Like, we can't pay for private. I mean, like, like elementary private school, yo. We aren't talking about like college. We aren't talking in like backwoods North Carolina. This isn't like earth shattering stuff. It's like a $7,000 a year tuition. And she's saying, they're saying, can we do it? Because our bank account not looking so hot, right? And she was right. And so I had all of this value tied up in this business, and that value wasn't in my bank account. It was in the business. It was on my balance sheet of my company, not in mine. And so like, we weren't going on trips. And here's the other catch there, like back to the balance of it, like even if I wanted, even if I had the funds to do it, did I have the time to be able to take the trip? Did I know how to create value from it? I probably didn't even know how to, but that's number one. Balance sheet looked good, bank account looked bad. Been there?
Yep. Well, and so like before you keep going to, maybe put this context around it. Because it sounds like there's a lot of personal stuff, but I think that there's like, money is not the goal, but it provides us the flexibility to have the other goal that we're reaching. And I think about like, when you and I talk about ownership framework, I mean, it's like, what are the trade-offs? And because I've never had this, and a lot of my clients I've worked with over the years haven't either, where what's the trade-off between more money today, income, cash flow for salary distributions and taxes versus reinvestment for equity growth? Because it's like, okay, I mean, you got $40 million. You could probably have slowed down the growth and then replaced yourself, you know, accumulated some cash, but there's no visibility into that trade-off. But like, we still need to know what the hell we want once we have that data. So there's kind of two parts. One is like the data, and then like the actual understanding of it. But then it's also on like clarity of like, what the hell are you trying to solve for?
And so that's where that life piece came in for me. Like what I call this, Ryan, is like, how are we validating what we do every day, right? What's our personal scorecard, right? And when my personal scorecard was the value of the business, like guess who feels great? Guess who's excited when he stands on stage? Guess who everybody wants to be friends with? And everybody thinks my life is amazing, right? Because of the scorecard that I'm measuring by. But I had a problem. And the real scorecard was that, listen, I had never even defined what was enough in my life. What the real issue was
is, what do you want to do with your time, right?
Yeah. Like me and my wife hadn't sat down and said, listen, the truth was, it was my ego. Like my ego was like, baby, shut up. My scorecard at work is full, it's hitting, and everybody loves me. But at home, where my original scorecard had always been, when you said, Eric, what do you want out of your life? Well, I want this cool experience with my family. I want an experience in my life. I want to travel. I want to do all these things. I hadn't defined that scorecard, and I had long since forgot about it. So how much money, what experiences did I need created inside of my personal life? How much do those experiences cost? And so how do I just notch that needle a little bit to make sure my needs were being met? In other words, my personal needs and the needs of my family weren't being met. We hadn't figured out how to move from balance sheet to personal needs. The only problem, Ryan, is because again, nobody was coaching me on this. I thought the only way to do it was to go all from one and rip all the other.
Yep. Yep. Well, and I think it's I'm tracking 100%. And like, this is where you and I were driving, where like the words where it's like ownership goals should drive operations.
Yes.
And you and I were talking about EOS. So many people jump into these, annual planning, they just make shit up. The inmates run the asylum, and it's like, we're just going now. And it's like, well, what the hell do I want? Yeah. And how much cash flow do I as the owner need? What are the trade-offs of the cash flow today versus reinvestment for the equity growth? And what do I as the owner need? Then backing into then how much the trade-offs are of those things. And I think it's very fascinating where it's like that ownership goal, like private equity doesn't buy company. I mean, you can actually, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Is like private equity, they don't buy companies, be like, all right, everybody, what should we do? It's like they come in and they have a plan. Yeah. And they have like, and they want help with that. But like, it's that ownership goals drive the actual, and then those are your personal goals at the end of the day, because you're private equity. If you're not behind a big firm, you are still private equity. It's just for you, but you have to clarify your goals. Equity. Do you know, like, did you have to go through that challenging situation to clarify what you truly wanted with your personal life?
Yes, but it was too late. It happened after I exited.
How could you have figured that out prior?
Eric needed somebody to talk to Eric about it. I needed a framework to look at it. I needed somebody, just like you and I did. I wish that you and I could have talked about this 6 years ago, bro. Like you could have like we could have just led each other down the path to say, no. Pause, time out. No big decisions. Let's talk about something else, right? Yeah. Like let's talk about
no big decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like a trap and there was only one way out. And so I took it. And so, man, if we could open up that conversation, by the way, I've coached over 100 entrepreneurs, right? Do you want to know, like 96% of them, when I ask them what their goals are, they're building a $100 million company.
I love it because I literally got off a call with someone in the home services space. He's like, $100 million. And I was like, why?
So if you're listening right now, if you're listening right now and you're building to a $100 million company, you are a statistic and you need this now. You need to engage this conversation at this point right now more than ever, because you know what I realized? Like, first, a $100 million company means nothing. Absolutely nothing. What? Do you own 1% of a $100 million company?
Is it enterprise equity value or net proceeds, by the way?
Yeah. Like, is that what somebody pays? Is that goes in your bank account? How much time? Like, none of those things actually matter. So when we can work backwards and say, what do I want to extract and feel inside my life? And you know, the scarier thing about that is it's dynamic. I'm sorry. It's only as good as right now. How many times have your dreams and ideas and thoughts changed? My crap changes every 90 days. And so like for right now, what do I want inside of my life? Right. And I have to, dude, we just don't respect our own needs, Ryan. I have to show a little bit of respect for Eric's needs, for his wife's needs, and for his family's needs. And I've got to respect those needs enough inside of the process, be willing to put them up here and say, listen, dude, this is the only reason we build businesses. Like, I'll be honest with you. I know hubris, excitement, great. But at the end of the day, if your business never gives you anything personal, do you really want to build the business?
Well, here's my take on this is that I think most owner operators start a business or get into business because they want independence over their time. And the reality is we need cash flow and equity to maintain that independence over our time. And we believe our operating business will get us there. We'll get swallowed up by all the shit in our business. And then we have to figure out how to get back into the ownership box. But what I think is very fascinating about your story is like you pretty quickly went from being a dentist to then being a CEO, or I see, like, you know, there's a lot of the, you know, the whole e-myth or whatever it is where like there's so many people that are in the trade. When I say trades, yeah, it's whatever skill set you have,
yes,
but they don't get into then even running a business. But you were able to do that. And then like it was that ownership spot that like somehow you learned the hard way. But like, what helped you go from being a dentist? Wait, let me go back, Eric. Like,
it's cool.
Why did you start being, you wanted to be a dentist. You said for income and, you know, sustainability from your family, but you went from dentist to then kind of entrepreneur dentist, which is very rare, to then selling to private equity. I mean, that whole journey in your space is rare. How did you evolve your thoughts over time?
And you know, I think like to your point, like really quickly, right? And number one, I never wanted to be daddy's dentist. It was never attractive to me. Like you open up the dental publications. It's like, hey, it's me. I'm Dr. So-and-so. Everybody esteems me. I never wanted to be that guy.
Why'd you become a dentist then?
Because I wanted the security of being able to make great money with my hands, but I wanted to be a business owner. And like I knew what the upside looked like and I tasted it. And so I wanted the security of the downside, but the opportunity of the upside.
So like, which is super fat, you know, I'm tracking you, but like you had to figure that out way ahead. Cause like, dude, like, I mean, I figured all this stuff out way after. I mean, I didn't know shit when I was in college. It was like, my dad was like, go be a sales guy. As long as you can sell shit and provide value, you'll be just fine. I was like, got it. And then I just go get my degree. But like, you know, you're signing up for hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, years of training and education. So like when and how along your journey did that idea resonate with you that was like, hey, 10-year track, got it?
Do you know, when I signed up to be a dentist, it was like, this is a safe play. First off, you got a brain. I got a brain. Science is easy for me. I realized I can do this and I can make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. It's going to be good. I didn't think millions. I thought hundreds of thousands. That's fine. This isn't a bad gig. Then I didn't know as much about what I was getting into. I only knew the story. I knew the story. Oh, Dennis, like people will think you're pretty
Where were you when that? I'm sorry. I'm just pulling this.
Yeah.
Were you like someone in your childhood or were you sitting in the dental chair and you're like, oh, I can't wait to do this?
So actually, I said no. When I was a kid going to the dentist is like, you should be a dentist. I need you to be a dentist, Eric. You'll love being a dentist. And I was always like, no, that's dumb. No, that's dumb. No, that's dumb. Then I had my wisdom teeth taken out when I was like 17. And I told the oral surgeon, I was like, hey, I thought this would suck. Cause he's like, you need your wisdom teeth out. I'm like, I think this sounds stupid. There's no reason I need this. And he's like, no, just trust me. And afterwards I was like, this is a pretty cool experience. Like, and he's like, well, do you want to come work with me this summer? And I was like,
oh, interesting. Got
it. I need money. Like, okay, yeah. I'll come in. And what I didn't know is that I'm just a sick puppy and like blood and guts everywhere. I loved it. Like that stuff. Like, so I had the realization.
Can't do it, man.
That was my thing is I was like, okay, so like I can make like really good money doing nasty stuff like this. And he's like, yeah. So I was like, okay.
That's awesome.
That was like, okay, step one, you know, but yep. I didn't really know what I was getting into. So while I got into school, and you know, like everybody there is like, they're nerding out. And I realized something really quickly, like it's all about energy application, right? It was pretty simple to get a B or a C, right? Like don't tell my patients this. It was pretty simple to get a B or a C, but the difference in studying output and everything to get an A was like 3X, 5X. I had to work 3 or 5 times harder to get an A. And so what I realized is I was like, well, listen, why don't I just get Bs and I'll be in the top half of my class. But what can I do with that additional time? And what I did with that additional time is I read everything. And by the way, when I was an undergrad, I wanted to run a business. I was like, I did some business school. Like
Do you have entrepreneurs as family members or?
None. Actually, my family is the opposite of entrepreneurs. And that's what drove me to entrepreneurship. My dad was an airline pilot that literally got screwed every time airlines merged, right? He just got hosed every time, lost seniority, lost retirement, lost all that stuff. And the one thing, and my mom too, she was a flight attendant, same thing. And the one thing that I knew was that my dad could have been the best pilot or the worst pilot and nothing mattered in his career. All that mattered was what airline he chose and when he signed up. Didn't matter if he was any good whatsoever. And so the one thing that I knew, Ryan, was that I was going to be in a career where I control my own destiny. That was the one thing that mattered.
Control your income, man. Anti-fragile. Figure it out. So that way, yep.
At least I can blame me, you know? I'm good at blaming that guy. But then, so while all the other students in school are studying how to get all the questions right, I'm studying how to run dental businesses. I'm reading all these magazines about it. I'm like taking continuing education courses. I'm like, hey, I'm just a dental student, but would you give me your course for free? And they're like, oh, that's so cute. Sure. And so I was learning about the opposite side of it.
Yeah,
and I was learning about, and the other thing that I understood, listen, nobody really knows how good their dentist is. Nobody really knows.
You know what my favorite line is? You know what they call a doctor who got a D in school? A doctor.
Doctor, right? Like that's it. And so it was while everybody else was learning how to be a dentist, I was focusing my time on building a business. And that's where everything started to shift. Cause then building the business started to become more sexy to me than just being a dentist.
What was sexy about it? Tell me more about why is sexy?
You know what, man? Like Ryan, I bet a lot of people that are listening to this resonate with the fact that they just don't want to be like everybody else. I break boxes, dude. I'm an outlier. Like that's how I live. And it wasn't good enough. I'm sorry. Like I really respect people that can enjoy it. It wasn't going to be good enough for me to have just like one great dental practice and practice dentistry for the next 50 years.
Let me pull this thread because I'm tracking you and I would resonate with that. But if I were to go one layer deep in the first principles for me, I'm curious if this was maybe reflecting back part of why you were like looking at all this other stuff on the other side of the dentistry stuff is that my anxiety is so high when I can't control the shit around me that like when I, cause I like, I would use the word sexy or I tried this stuff, but it was like the pursuit of trying to figure out how to control the stuff around me that like, I will go there no matter what. I guess is my, and so like I would use the, I personally would use the word sexy or whatever, like, but I'll spend all the time like why I'm diving into monetary policy, because it's like, if I can't control that shit, like what the hell's going on here? So do you resonate with that, or is
dude, I remember in my first week of marriage, my wife and I went on our honeymoon. We got done. We moved to North Carolina, like from Florida. And in the first week, like, of course, I'm having my first real argument with my wife. And you know what she says to me? She said, "Eric, you're just a control freak." And I was like, "Oh, hell no." And then I sat there and I thought about it for a minute.
Like,
and I was
like, "Oh, you're right."
I was like steaming out of my ears. I'm like, "How dare you say that?" And like, I stopped and I thought about it. I had this moment I will never forget. I remember the room of the apartment that I was sitting in because it was that important. And I realized I'm a control freak. Mm-hmm. I've always been a control freak. And so one of the things that we do as control freaks, right? And we can call that a good term or a bad term. People use it derogatorily, but you and I have learned to use that positively. And you know what our power is that we learn to move things from being outside of our control into our control, right?
Chaos and then to order.
It's like I moved from my future being within my control, from outside of it to being inside of it, right? And you know, the other thing that we learn sometimes, there are some things that we simply can't control, right? Like you actually, until you change your role and your duty, you can't control monetary policy. But what you're looking at right now is you're looking at how can I control how monetary policy affects me, right?
Yes, correct.
Like, so there's three stages. Can't control it whatsoever. Can acknowledge it and control for how it affects me, or I put it under my control. It's actually funny. I'm teaching young dentists this right now. I'm like, and you know what's funny about this? Oh, I'm like, you hit the nail on the head. Do you know where 99% of our frustration comes from, Ryan?
Lack of control.
It always comes from things that we can't control whatsoever.
I want to hear it because I agree with it. And it's so much because I think. My mind's going 1,000 ways, but like I do this thing when I do my workshops where I have this, for the audience, I'm holding my like hand level and say, okay, here's reality and here's expectations. And so reality is like horizontal and then expectations are 45 degree angle. And the gap is resentment and unhappiness because it's a gap of expectations. And I just want them to be correlated. So like, it's not necessarily where for me, I don't have to control everything. I just need the right expectations set. And it's like understanding it so that way I can have appropriate expectations. And if I don't like that, then I have the ability to then change what I'm doing.
And you know what else? Even though 99% of our frustration, anger, orneriness comes from things we can't control. The other thing is that the one thing that we tend to not look at and put energy towards is the power of the things we can control. In other words, like, I mean, I've learned this in training dentists for years, like the thing that's going to make them, I can guarantee them that I'm going to make them millions of additional dollars. Like I will, if you follow my little process here, I promise you, I will make you millions of additional dollars over your career. And it's all about focusing on the basic things that are under their control and they don't want to do it. They want to bitch about all the things they can't control. And I'm no different. Like I'm the same way inside of my life. Dude, you pointed out like in your conversation about monetary policy, like I went down the rabbit hole. Like, dude, listen, in COVID, like all the things we were going down the rabbit hole of, I was always scared, angry, afraid, frustrated about stuff I had no control over. And then I realized, why don't I let go of that? And why don't I focus on those like little things that I can control? And all of a sudden, life looked great, dude. And I think that that's probably like, maybe this is a macro rule for us in life, you know, like make 3 buckets, can control it, can control how I react, but not what happens, can't control crap.
I think there's probably more I know there's more you can't control. And like, this is where, you know, for the health wise, it's the meditation and it's the exercise and all the other shit. But I think where then I gravitate, and it sounds like you and I both have in different aspects of this owner, operator, entrepreneurship space is like educating myself so that way I knew what the F decision to make. And I think that's where the biggest challenge comes in is like, okay, like going back to like, maybe if you can give us kind of more clarity on both, two of the decision points were like you told me in the last call too, is like you were about to get out and then you implemented EOS. So like, what was it that what was making you feel stuck? And then what did EOS solve? And then you still ran into another wall, which is why you sold the private equity. So there was obviously, it wasn't the everything for the business and for yourself, but like, so what were the two different decision points that you could have had more information in?
Decision point one, decision point two. One, when I was at that early stage before EOS, everything, my just hair was on fire every day, dude. Every single day, like crap was hitting the fan. Everything inside of my business was reactivity. It was like, there was no proactive nature to it whatsoever. The moment, and like I wanted proactive, but that just wasn't in my vocabulary. And so like two steps forward, three steps back. One step forward, two steps back. Like it just, and dude, revenue stalled, right? Like I had been, you know, okay, good. Like 1 million, 3 million, 7 million, 8 million, 10 million, 11 million, 11 million, 11. Like it just, everything stalled. And with growth comes complexity, right? And so now there was a lot more complexity. Now there were a lot of mouths to feed. There were hundreds of mouths to feed inside my business family. And the risk got to be so much higher. There were those days, Ryan, where I was like, why don't I just cut back to where it's like me and like two ladies that help me out? Because my risk is really low. It's not a lot of lives that are impacted by when this crap.
Yeah, and you were probably making more money when there was a couple people behind you. And
I was making cash flow great money early on. I was like, dude, who would have guessed that some of my greatest earning ability in my first decade was the first year when I was like doing it. And then it's like, okay, adding more locations, adding more dentists, continuing to creep down and like, oh, now I'm making less than most of the people I employ. What the heck?
Yeah, and, dude, I have had clients. I know, right, Eric? And I have had clients where in the home services space, grew to 10 million and was like, F this. I'm not making any money. And then dial it all the way back again so they could make more income. Because, and this is where the whole job versus, you know, building an equity and an asset, just like there's no framework to understand the trade-offs of all this stuff. So then it's like, and he's done this twice now where he's like, oh, now I get it again, but I'm going to have decision-making between the trade-offs.
And you know, we're like, not training our youth to understand this either. Like, because dude, listen, the reality of life, nobody talks truth. Right? We all tell stories, but we leave out like all the pains and hardships. That's like why I take joy in talking about this. Like, I just want to cry and like let everybody know this crap hurt and it sucked. And so at least there's openness and honesty there, but we don't tell the truth about that when we're telling people to go into business. You just want to be your own boss. You're going to be so happy when you're in control of all your life.
By the way, you don't have to pay, you can't pay yourself for 10 years. What?
Right. Yes, right? You're going to suffer and you're going to make less money 9 years down the line with a company that's 10 times larger than you do right now. Go figure on that one. Like, that's not possible. How is it? It doesn't make logical sense, Ryan, but it is real, you know?
So yeah, 100%. So decision point one is
so here. EOS was like, listen, I walked in and I was like, y'all, listen, at that point I had spent $3.1 million in consulting over the prior 10 years.
Oh my gosh, like, listen, yeah.
I've touched everything, signed up for every program, same old stuff. Y'all know, I get it. Like, I'm done. And they're like, listen, try this one more thing. I'm like, no. How many times have we said that? And they're like, no, really, make this the last one. If it doesn't work. And this was a different approach, Ryan, because everything else had been about, you know, like, listen, the iceberg, right? Everything else had been about solving the symptoms up at the top above the water. This was like saying, hey, the big iceberg underneath the water, that's like the problem. You need to get organized down here and it will solve all that stuff. And I was like, okay, if my team believes in this, as like before Eric says, see all y'all employees, I'm gonna go just sit over here and make money again, which we all know that wouldn't work. But if you believe in it, I'll do it. And it worked. And so I learned a lesson inside there that what had been missing the entire time was a foundation, was a language, was like vision, values, like structure, meeting cadence.
Org chart, like KPIs, meetings, the whole thing.
Simple. Yep. It's like basic. It works in every business. There's not like, we all know now, like anybody listening that's like, yeah, I figured it out in business. You figured out the tools, right? Like
yep,
it's not hard.
Yep, yep.
So then second point, right? Second pain point was, all that was humming. Like, it felt good. Honestly, I was like, I was even putting in fewer hours than ever. Dude, I was living a pretty good life. I got up, I went and I did CrossFit every morning at 9 a.m. came home at 10, maybe took a call like while I was changing and eating breakfast and all that sort of stuff. Like I had a good schedule. Then I went into the office about 10:30, 11 o'clock and like worked until 4. Not hard, right? And the business, and the less I worked, the more the business would grow. So everything looked good. But the problem was I was disconnected. I was not, I wasn't.
Was it an identity crisis, Eric?
Dude, my business was my identity and I was starting to recognize that that wasn't who I was. I was sitting there like I didn't like who I saw when I looked in the mirror because he wasn't showing up for school plays. My kids were getting bigger and I wasn't as connected to them as I wanted to be. And
why weren't you? I'm super curious. So why weren't you showing up for school plays and more present if you were doing CrossFit at 9?
Because it was more validating for me to go win in my business because it felt good to be in there. And because you know what? Like, I didn't know how to extract validation out of my home life. I didn't know how to feel like I was creating value at home. That was the issue. I knew how to have people be like, oh, Eric, you're so amazing at work, but I didn't know how. Actually, when I went home, it hurt. Like, no offense, like my wife didn't do anything wrong, but she beat me up because she knew I wasn't performing, right? Like, and so we're growing further and further apart. Do you want to be around people that make you feel like horse crap? No. And so when I went home, I felt like horse crap. When I went to work, I felt like king of the world. When I traveled,
did you not? But then also, I've seen and worked with a lot of other entrepreneurs where once they get into that quote unquote visionary box, which again, very ambiguous of what that is or what the roles are, mm-hmm. they actually have this like, I've kind of got all this freedom of time, but I have no idea what I should be doing and what I should be working on. So then, therefore, you're not even getting your cup full at work. It was that.
That's it. I had control of my time, but nobody had shown me how, nobody was giving me a system to use it to get the outcomes that I wanted at home. I knew how to be a visionary of my business. I didn't know I could create a vision for what I wanted, my family life, my marriage, my kids, my health. I could create a vision for what I wanted those to look like, but I didn't know how to put that in motion. Nobody gave me the same tools that I had been having everywhere. And here's the thing, like, you don't need an event. You don't need a book. You need a freaking system, something that operates sequentially, right? I needed a system. I needed a schedule and I needed support inside of my personal life to say, Eric, this is how you get what you want. This is the order of operations. And these are the people that will stand beside you to get you there, right? I had that in my business every day. I had it every single day in my business. We were working as teams. We had outside support. We had a cadence of meetings. We had a cadence of our quarterlies. We had all the stuff. And I had nothing that I was applying at home in the same way. And so guess what? I was winning now in my business, but my home life looked like the business did before I implemented EOS. Every time I went home, Ryan, I had more fires than I knew what to do with, right? Like, just wasn't cool. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, and know. Like,
I want to unpack what you ended up, because you, for the listeners, I think what's fascinating about what you and I both have learned from our journeys is I ended up solving the ownership framework of like how to not accidentally sell the private equity when you could have just created more cash flow for yourself. Because you said, first and foremost, you had balance sheet wealth, not cash flow wealth. But let's assume, because again, we don't have to, like, that's a lot of the stuff that we can go back to that, but I wanted, you know, you took the path of how to figure out what you should be doing with your time as a husband, as a father. Cause I believe, like, maybe this is just, I'm obviously projecting, but it's like, if I would have said, Eric, here you go, by the way, here's an ability to make $250,000 or $500,000 in sustainable income while your company hums along. And it could have freed up some of that, you know, balance sheet, rich cash flow, poor issue. So you could have actually then focused on what you then have tackled. I don't know if that's a good fork in the road, because I think like if we would have solved maybe the cash flow issue, then you could have then. But then again, what are you going to do?
I still would have had my own problem.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Exactly.
You're right. So what you're really saying is that there were two problems, two big problems that I was sitting in. Number one, to move from balance sheet to personal income. That was problem number one. And I thought that, like, I used that as the excuse for problem number two, which was, and I suck at being a person, a husband and a dad and a friend. Like, nobody's shown me how to actually develop that, right?
Oh, and so you're right. How you worded that, because you know what? That is literally, if I were to sum up from 400 podcasts and Bo Burlingham's Finish Big Book, when he talks about how many people are so miserable, I think that this is the root problem. Yep. Like, because I mean, it's like, we understand this game and this dopamine and this ego, go, 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 go. But then it's like, oh, make a drastic decision. And it's like, oh shit. Like, still, like, I've got a beautiful pie chart and Charles Schwab that looks really good, but like, now what? And it, but there's not, it's, it didn't solve this problem that you're talking about right here.
All the greats talk about it. Second Mountain by David Brooks, like, same thing. It's moving from a life through a life of achieved success to a life of meaning and purpose, right?
It's, you've like, heard of a Success to Significance by
absolutely.
Like, yeah, those guys have been on the podcast. I love it.
It's the same concept for all these. And like, all like, the funny thing, Ryan, is that I would say the vast majority of us get to that point. It's like a timetable, right? 35 to 45 to 55, depending on where you are in the cycle. I think that 3/4 to maybe even 90% of people get to that point, because once we've been grinding enough through it and we realize, like, wait, every day looks the same. And at the end of the day, none of this crap that I think is so sexy matters, right? And so, so you move from success to the significance. And then it's like, oh, I wish somebody had told me that all along. Do you know the real question, Ryan, is, and this is actually the question I would be, I've had like Gen Z people ask me this question. And the real question is, if we know that ahead of time, can we change the outcomes and change the journey? I think so, right? Because, you know, a lot of what we say is like, well, I had to blow everything up to learn the lesson. If that's the truth, that we have to blow things up and screw things up to learn the lesson, then like, why don't we just teach kids by beating the crap out of them, right? Or like by burning houses down.
Yeah. What's the wisdom versus knowledge or whatever that, you know, like it's there's
choice, right?
Yeah. I want to hear how you got to this, but I just got to tell you a funny story, dude. I was lucky enough to have my father, who blew his own shit up all the time. And if he was sitting right here, he'd be laughing his ass off, because he has come out the other side, Eric. And we're having a lot of fun together these days. But like, I watched him, dude, and I was like, he went through a bunch of personal stuff. Then ended up he ended up getting a divorce with my mom. They were going through a divorce while we were buying out his business partner, while we were trying to sell the company. Then, and I watched him buy cabins, yachts, cars. And I'm like, at one point, cause he got back together with my mom 3 times. And I looked at him and I was like, Dad, I ended up buying this like huge house on this lake. And I was like, you know, that like, when you guys move into that house, it's still going to be you two. And now, like, so like, I watched all of that. So like, it's like, mayday, mayday, do not do. And I've had all these other podcasts where like, I'm like, it's just like validation. Like, hey, there is material wealth that will provide some level of happiness. There's the whatever. I mean, obviously it's not right. 75 grand anymore. It's probably 150 to 250. But I say all this because the phrase that, I don't know where I came across it, Eric. I didn't invent it or at all, but it was like, I run and there I am. You ever heard that?
That's it.
But it's like, so going back to like blowing things up. Sorry, I had to go on that digression because ringing true, man.
Blowing things up.
Yep. So you don't believe now that you have to blow things up.
No.
So like, and right. you've packaged what you've learned into a framework, obviously, it sounds like. So like, what, walk us through like why you don't think we have to, and what, if you were to go back to Eric, who is still has the company before selling the private equity, what were you needing at that moment?
I needed 3 things. I needed, number one, I needed a system. I needed a structure. I needed somebody to say, hey, been in the problem, solve the problem. This is how we do it, right? And for me to be able to like, oh yeah, that sounds like me. Yes, those are all the problems I have. And yeah, I would prefer to like, there's an easy way. Okay, please do. The second thing I needed is I needed a schedule. I needed to know what I needed to do and when I needed to do it. And the schedule needed to fit in all the busyness of the business, right? Like I had to be able to, so like it had to be low touch, but that's what we've designed, right? Like, let's keep it simple. And the third thing that I needed is I needed support. I just needed other people that I needed to know that there were, so I had a bunch of business partners. I love them. Still love them to this day. They weren't after the same things I was after. They were winning by me sacrificing. So what I didn't have anywhere where I went and there were people that were like, no, Eric, I didn't, when I asked you, how are you? I didn't want to know how your EBITDA was. I wanted to know how your marriage was. Like, how's your family doing? Like, how are your relationships? I had nowhere in my life where anybody was asking me any of that, right? And I needed that. I needed people that cared more. I needed people that showed that they unconditionally loved me. They didn't love me for who I am or what I've done. They loved me because I am, right? And so I needed a space to be supported there and other people that were showing me, hey, we hear you, Eric. We know where you are. We know how hard it is. Here's things that we've done to help solve that.
I want to pull this right for a quick second. Sorry for interrupting. Cause like I been there many times, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I can laugh about it now. Right. But like whether it's, the three business partners or three businesses that I've had with partners that I've had misalignments with, or like my family business prior to that, my wife is the most supportive life partner ever. But like there is a threshold of the shit she's willing to deal with. So like okay. I say it like, because I want your thoughts on how you bifurcate this, because like I could go to her for anything. And then now she's that, I mean, it, like, but there's just certain, she plays a role within the whole. And then there's other people, but like I have struggled, Eric, where like, if someone hasn't gone through what I've gone through, like my level of listening to them is like a zero.
Yeah.
And so like, does that resonate with you? And then how, cause as you're looking at this, like back to your old self, how would you have realized that you were looking at someone that you should listen to and that could play a supporting role, wasn't replacing your spouse or any of these other people? That you were missing a person or a system? Does the question make sense?
It makes total sense. And to answer, like, first off, my wife can't fulfill that role. Like, I needed somebody that I could talk to about the fact that my marriage was the hardest thing in my life. Like, I needed somebody else that was like, hey, look, I built a big business too, Eric, and my marriage was the hardest thing in my life. And here's what I went through. And I could sit there and say, oh, yeah, I feel that one. Woo! Like, oh, you might have had it worse than I have it. Right. And to sit there and say, and Eric, you have a choice in how you do this. And like, here's how you own it. Because you know, something happens too, Ryan. When you think like an entrepreneur, dude, like thinking like an entrepreneur is a gift and it's also a curse. Because when we think like entrepreneurs, we want everything inside of our lives to be a 10 out of 10, baby. Like, and you know what? Like, I'm confessing, like my marriage was a one out of 10. And you know what? Like I needed somebody to say, Eric, do you realize how rare it is for so many things in your life to be a 10 out of 10? Are you okay if your marriage is only ever a 4? Can you actually find a way that you can be okay with that? And like sitting through it and like saying, we can move you from a 1 to a 4, and then you get to make a choice about what you want to do next, right? Like just different approaches to things. And we're think like entrepreneurs and like, how do we apply the same skills that made our businesses amazing to make our lives amazing and what we need them to be, right? Sitting there and saying, I mean, how does that same conversation sound inside of the business? It might say, Eric, you're in a market where that marketing style just isn't going to work. Like, is it okay for you to just give up on that marketing style, considering that you have 5 other marketing styles that work fine, right? Like, oh yeah, you know, I don't have to be perfect at everything. And so, you know, whether it's those, and the other thing too, Ryan, is that like entrepreneurs and high achievers, like we speak a different language. You know, we put things into action right away. We like, well, sometimes we also delay like crazy, but like—
There's usually a reason though. Like subconsciously, we know exactly why we're not right. Delaying.
Yeah. And we can speak to each other. We can say, yeah, dude, I know how that feels, Ryan, you know? And so I needed that and I never found it. I had to build it. I had to build that around me. I was looking for it in mastermind groups, but what I found is that in mastermind groups, everybody all still wanted to talk about their businesses. Like they come in like all puffed up with their chest, like, you know, EBITDA, revenue, market share, you know.
It's usually revenue, not EBITDA, dude. Just for whatever it's worth. Right.
Or even worse, it's like you think my business has revenue and you think my business has EBITDA because you know my business, but we ain't got either, right? Like it was a lot of those. And so I recognized that something was missing. And, you know, at the end, it's funny.
Where did you look? Like, so mastermind groups, what other places did you look for it?
Mastermind groups, training programs, all those things. I looked everywhere.
Did you ever look, about therapists or like any?
So I did. So you know what the thing with therapy is? Therapy is a great solution. It's high energy output, high time output, and relatively like per hour, high expense for what you get.
I agree. And I you know, one of the things that I've struggled with it is like, it's like trying to get marital advice from a priest. Like you never done this before. You know what I mean? Like, I honor the construct of therapy.
Me too.
I recommend it every day. Agreed.
Yep.
And I think there's a,
but it's a different, it's right, just, right.
You're solving a different thing.
Heavy. Right? It's heavy. Do you know what, Ryan? When I got done with therapy, so my wife and I, like that was the first thing we tried. We tried therapy because when I'm selling the business, it didn't work. And now we're like, we're either going to get a divorce or we're going to figure this crap out. Let's go get therapy. And dude, like every week after the therapy, do you know how I felt? I felt like somebody reached in and ripped apart little pieces of my soul, like tore it into little pieces. And like, I shouldn't be laughing.
I'm sorry.
It's true, right? I went back and I got in my car. I remember exactly where I was sitting again, like special moments. I remember my wife and I drove to therapy separate because I was coming from work, of course, right? And I remember afterwards, I went and I got in my car and I turned on my car. And I just exploded crying. And I was like, it was like this moment of, I am so emotionally emptied by this. And you know what happened, Ryan, is like when I would go back to work after therapy, I wasn't there, man. Like the amount of energy, and there are times and places when you need that amount of energy. It was killing everything else that I was doing in my life. And my wife was even kind enough to acknowledge it with me. She was like willing. I was like, listen, we've been doing this for a while. We're making progress. We've learned. Do you know what's funny? 80-20 rule, dude. The 20% of the skills that we had learned in communication were giving us 80% of the benefit. But the other 20%, right? Or the other 80% was us going in and just, it was like that therapist every week was like flogging us with like a whip and like making us bleed. And like,
I don't know the author's name, Eric, but, she was on Rogan and I think Peterson and Huberman or some other, a bunch of the tour of podcasts, but her book is called Bad Therapy.
Yes.
Have you,
so hot right now. So
yeah,
hot.
Yeah. Right now. And I actually had a buddy that sent it to me and goes, all right, Tansom, you're my data point because I was actually the only one of my family members who didn't see a therapist. And again, I think that there is a very specific reason for therapy and I appreciate it. So I'm not, the baby's not going out with the bathwater, but they're like, doesn't look like the output is working. Are we on track? But like I say all this because like I think it, like if like the people that I listen to, Eric, are people that have been there, ate glass, made the choices, and they're not. I don't want to be told what to do, right? I mean, I think that's the same thing that you were saying about these, you know, being a high achiever. It's like I just want someone to say like, oh, like I did this and I did this and I did that and I wish I would have done this. And like one thing I did, I don't know if you ever joined EO.
Oh yeah,
but one. One thing I did like about EO is how adamant they are about you never say you should. You only experience share, but you still, then it's just luck that you find someone that had the exact experience that you needed in that exact moment. So it's more luck, but there's a format that I think is more conducive to high achievers taking and changing their behavior.
Ryan, what you're saying is just being seen, right? And you know, inside of therapy, if it's me, my wife, and a therapist, the therapist might see me some in a very diplomatic, neutral position. My wife doesn't, might see me as well through good therapy,
she's
right?
She's seeing herself though, trying to get her own needs met,
she's
right?
Got I mean, she's, part of, yeah. She's dealing with her own thing. But when we're in a group, like with other people like us, like, do you know, when we create it the right way, there's room for every one of those people to just see us, to just see us and be there and like see us for who we are, all the stuff. And that is like, I thought it was lame when I first heard about it, and it changes your life. Like, it is life changing. Once you've experienced what it feels like to be seen by people you appreciate, that you see as your peers, you can't go back to a world where it's not happening. I can't live a life right now, Ryan, where every 90 days I'm not sitting down with a bunch of people who are doing the same type of stuff in life, but that I can expose my like dirty undergarments to and have them see me for it and be like, hey man, that's hard. We see you. And like, no need to solve anything. Just see it. And like, and you know, it's actually funny, Ryan. Like, one of the things I realized in my marriage, entrepreneurs are built to solve problems.
Yeah, but we do. I gotta say, I'll put a link to it. There's a reel that my wife sent me recently, and it's, there are solution friends and then there are empathy friends, because I actually got empathy tattooed on my arm here, so I don't forget. And it's like, I am a, like, it's the nail. It's right there. It's right there. I just want to fix it.
Just, yeah, the forehead nail, right? Yeah, like that's, yeah. And as entrepreneurs, we've got a hammer and we're ready to go. And one of the things that I realized, it was interesting through building One Life System, through building a place where like, where we learn the power of it, I realized that in my marriage, number one, I learned that it was easier for me to not solve things and to let them be present and to leave space. And I also learned it in my teams. I learned inside my teams, like, it's funny, as I look back on my first entrepreneurial journey, I realized I solved way too many things and I didn't have to solve all the stuff that I did. And that it was actually, believe it or not, once you feel the power, like, it's easier to just not solve things and to let it be present, and that everybody was happier. So
why is it so, why is it so hard? We're like, it's like this most effed up dynamic. We're like, what allowed us to become entrepreneurs, do hard shit, go through all that stuff is the exact opposite of what allows us to continue to move to the next stage. It's like this, like, letting go, not having control, letting other people solve their problems and sitting back and reflecting. And it's just some irony that's just too funny.
It's the point we made earlier though. Like, as we go through the journey, like from success to significance, right? The thing we thought was so great, we realized wasn't the real thing. So it's like we're warriors that have this sword that solves problems. And like, we've just been thrashing and cutting things to bits. And we realized that the power was in not having to use the sword, like that we could get the same conquering without the sword at all. And so it's like that grad. And you know what's fun too, Ryan, is though the consideration, if this, then that. If we look back historically and we realize, oh, the thing that I think is so powerful, I discovered one day wasn't the thing. What do I see as powerful now? What's it going to feel like when I discover someday that that's not the thing, right? And like, that's, do you know what that is? It's this thing that's been going on for millennia. It's called wisdom, right? That's what wisdom is. Wisdom is the transformation of knowledge and awareness that only comes from time, that, you know, we can accelerate wisdom. We've all met people that were uncommonly wise. It's because they extracted that crap from somewhere, you know? And in an information age, we have the ability to extract, in a meta point, we have the ability to extract and leverage the wisdom of other people and apply it to our own lives to accelerate our returns, right? And people are doing that every single day. That's what education is. It's the extraction of wisdom and the application of it. Some people go to school and don't learn crap. Some people go to school and change earth because of the knowledge they garnered. Like, all that you and I are doing right now, we're giving people an opportunity to apply knowledge. I'm offering them a chance to apply it inside of their personal lives, inside of their families and marriages and things like that. You're offering an opportunity for people to apply this knowledge inside the space nobody wants to touch inside of our businesses, the owner stack. Nobody wants, like, it's this funny thing, just act like it's there and it'll go away. No, like, now you're giving the ability for people to apply collective knowledge there to extract outsized results. That's what we want.
So how in your One Life System, like, what is the, I mean, whatever cliff note, or making it accessible to people, like, so they realize that there's a problem, it's on the homes or the personal front. What's the framework consist of?
Well, it's really simple. We give people a way to a way to frame up their personal lives, right? Like the first thing you need is you need some goggles to put on to say, oh, okay, now I can see it clearly and I can come back to this. Second thing is we decide where we're going. What do you want your life to look like? So like just like in EOS, right? In EOS, we had to start by creating a vision for what we wanted our future to look like. We're going to do the same thing in One Life System. And it's really quick. It's amazing how quick it is. Who am I? Who am I becoming? And where am I going? Inside of my family, inside of my health, inside all these things. And once you build that picture, dude, it's like all we have to do is get together every 90 days to look at where we're going. How did we do on our commitments? What are we committing to for the next 90 days? Let's freaking go. It's real. I know I've dumbed it down to make it really simple, but that's all operating systems are inside of our businesses, right?
I like it.
All the accessory tools, all the accessory content, all the accessory stuff. You're a busy entrepreneur, right? Like all I'll tell you is I was like, Brian, hey, I can guarantee you that your life will be better. Your family health will be better. And all it's going to cost you is out of every 90 days, give me 4 hours. If you can give me less than 1% of your time of every 90 days, I promise you, you'll notice you're trending up, right? That's what operating systems are. Yep, operating systems even say more than that. They say one day, give us a day of every 90 and we'll get there, you know? And so, and guess what? Some people go at this arc. Some people go at this arc, right?
Well, it depends on your momentum and what, I mean, all you're doing is you're just redirecting the rocket or the ship or whatever you want to call it. What I think very fascinating, Eric, is I look at the ownership framework that I've been working on now and packaging up in the Independence by Design, and I'm writing the book and working on the workshops and enhancing everything now that I don't have any services tied to it, is like you're tackling. So in the first step of which I call understand the game, it's having personal clarity. Then it's understanding valuations and understanding exits, but it's like understanding the ownership stuff, but it starts with the personal clarity. But what I'm doing, and I made a specific choice, was I'm not going to tackle what you have. I'm acknowledging that if you don't tackle this, this will be the result or the potential result. So you need to go do something about it. But then I then tackle business valuations and exits and a strategic financial roadmap and the team of advisors and all that other crap that needs to be done. But there's this like olive branch out there saying like, hey, like, because Bo Brillingham says, you need to understand who you are, what you want from your business and why. And I took that first part and I kind of said, okay, that's someone else's job. You need to know what you want from your business and why is what I have. Right. And then, so then therefore it's like you said, okay, like I, like someone's got to tackle this. So that way, cause again, I could help someone build an ownership roadmap, but like to where?
Dude, I mean, this is why we vibe so hard. Like we're on the exact same page. That's why we've had great success with financial advisory firms and things like that. It's cause they typically don't have a really robust way to say, who are you? And inside of who you are, like, oh, here, listen, quick exercise, time out. Right now, if you're going to describe who you are, but you can't say anything about your occupation, profession, or anything professionally you do, what is it? And like, I've had people cry when I ask them that question because they're like, well, I don't, if I can't use that stuff, I don't even know who I am. Well, you are somebody. And it's because we've trained people as a society not to look at, we're screwed. Ryan, I would actually even make a case that when we look at our societal challenges right now, right? Our hatred for anybody that doesn't believe what we believe, et cetera, like all the stuff that's going on that creates adversity in our world. I believe that so much of it comes down to our failure to like be okay with just having an identity of who we really are outside of what everybody else in the world thinks, right? Like we've taken that away and we've instead, we define ourselves by the cults that we're in. We define ourselves by our political party affiliation, and anybody that isn't believing what I believe is destroying what I live for. And that's a freaking lie. That's oppression, man. That's us being oppressed by outside forces. What can you remember back to our principle? What can we exercise our control over? And like you can exercise complete and total control over you.
Yep. And what do you want? Like, what's your identity? Like it what? Like it's okay to, and like, and I think is, as we're kind of sliding into home here, is like I had this one gal in one of my workshops. She looked at me and she goes, you know what, Ryan? Not one time has anybody ever asked what I want. And I was just like, oh my God. It just like struck me to the core because she had like a $50 million business. And I was just like, I know, like you leave the space for it because it matters, you know, a lot. If you don't figure it out, look at everybody else that relies on you.
That hits me so hard, Ryan. I had the same exact experience when I built One Life System originally. Do you know who I built it for? I built it for my employees. I built it for my teams. And Listen, you know, we don't want to talk about personal lives with our teams. I did. And I asked them what their plan was, like how, what their plan was for their life. I said, don't worry about our work. Where are you going? And I had multiple team members that cried, like, and said, you know, in my life, nobody has ever asked what I wanted or what I cared about. The same exact thing. Dude, like, what a crappy space for us to live in. Oh, that we should all have someone in our life that cares about what we want to become and that we become what we want to become, right? Like, what a gift to be able to offer. Yeah. And that makes me so happy.
And being an entrepreneur is a great platform and vehicle to be able to do that. I mean, it's a great ship, and you got to point the ship in the right direction. Eric,
we can harness our power for good, or we can harness it for evil. Today, we're talking about harnessing it for good.
Yeah. You're waking up, you're doing stuff. Might as well work on the right stuff that matters. Where can people follow you, man?
If they want to know more about me, which you probably don't, every medium, Dr. Dr. Eric J. Roman, ericjroman. But if you want to know more about One Life System, the number one life system, one word, onelifesystem.com. And you know what? We've got a really easy protocol for people to learn and understand how to get systematic, reproducible success inside of their personal lives. It looks just like the way they've been winning in their businesses for years. Whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a team member, or whether you want to simply support your team, it works for everybody. So yeah, come find out more.
It's awesome, man. How long have you been at that part of it?
One Life System, I built it inside of my teams about 7 years ago. I just kept it inside of my own company. Formalized and then about a year ago, I got convicted. That's convicted. because I was like, well, son of a gun, I've been making all these people wealthy for so many years as entrepreneurs, but they're none of them were actually getting the joy they wanted out of life. And that was always the gap filler.
Eric, my friend, it's been awesome, dude.
Awesome for me, awesome for you. I've loved hanging out with you, Ryan. Keep up the good work, my man.
Thanks for tuning into the conversation I had with Eric. I am very appreciative of his honesty, his time. And I think we're all in this journey of how do we balance cash flow, equity growth, the freedom over our time. And then, you know, at the end of the day, we all have to look ourselves in the mirror and figure out who we are and how we want to spend our time and how we are going to interact with others that are around us. And our business can hide a lot of that stuff. And his ability to reflect and say, hey, a lot of that was ego feeding. And hopefully anybody listening in that might be, you know, seeing a little bit of themselves, let's go through that reflection period before we pull the ripcord and do something dramatic. I am very excited for next episode. I've got Craig Rutledge back on the show. I have interviewed him a couple of times in the past. He's an executive compensation specialist and one of the best that I've ever met. And I literally learned a bunch more. Didn't really think it was actually possible. I was like pretty geeked out on this topic. And then as I was talking to Craig, I learned so much about the goal is how do we decouple ourselves from our role? A CEO that is not an owner has the ability to be comped on short-term and long-term incentives that are completely aligned with ownership. The ownership's cash flow goals of distributions, working capital, and the target equity valuation. And Craig breaks down in crazy awesome detail and simplicity how to actually align that CEO with the exact goals of the ownership. So stay tuned for that. I know you're going to love it. Thanks, everybody. And I will see you next week.